live from the front yard inside Ellis Island Casino. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Two Monday Night Football games on the way. I think they're both good games. I'm a little more vested in the Chargers with the SO significant other being into the Chargers. Chargers cards. And a good test right before that. Chargers and Cardinals going at 6 o'clock, Willie. We'll break down the game towards the end of this hour. And who is the best team in the AFC? Is it the team that's unbeaten? Or is it the Ravens? I believe the oddsmakers think it's the Ravens.
I think it's the Ravens.
Why?
Because I think that we're seeing what Pat Mahomes pointed out is it's still an offense that it's not the offense that it used to be. They're definitely depending on a stringent defense to get them by. There's mistakes on that, and I think with the emergence of Derrick Henry finally after the, what, first three games, I think it was then, since then, he's averaging 100 and something yards per. I think the balance of Jackson and Derrick Henry, what we're seeing with that, I think the potential of its defense, I just think it's a better balanced and overall better football team because of its offense, where I think the Chiefs are still, they're getting by. They're the two-time defending champs, so when they get in a situation, they're playing in certain, you know, late in the game, they've learned how to win, so that's what's getting them by. Whereas the Ravens, they lost their first two games, and they've been exceptional since, in my opinion. So I think that overall, the Ravens are a better team to this point based on how we've seen the season progress, where I think the Chiefs are still trying to figure some things out.
Chiefs do have a great defense, though. And I think a lot of times that's overlooked. And tonight we're going to see what the Ravens D does against Baker Mayfield, who's playing as good a level of football as he's played all season. Bucks are getting 4. The Cardinals are getting 1. Big 4 time.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents the Big 4 at 4. Number 4.
Willie's got a day for everything. He finds his national calendar. He's got national this and that day. What's today?
Today is National Loud Shirt Day. So I thought to myself,
You can be a loud shirt guy from time to time.
I can?
Yeah. I'm a loud Hawaiian shirt guy from time to time.
You're just a loud person.
But I'm not loud T-shirt guy. I don't think loud,
loud T-shirt.
I don't. You are. Yeah, you are. Who do you, what you always wear, is it Aaliyah? Is that loud? What do you think? You wear that T-shirt, don't you?
Well, Aaliyah.
What T-shirt do you wear? Another artist with an A name. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking about a brand. Yeah, Aaliyah. I'm sorry. I'm picturing a brand, not the late singer. Oh, yeah, print tees. Yeah, sure.
Anything else?
Nah, I'm usually trying to, it's just a tee, or I'm trying to wear our perfect gear. I'm really glad. I'm really glad that we're in hoodie season.
I love hoodie season, too. I don't think big fellas should wear loud T-shirts, especially, like, truly big, like fat fellas. Huh. I don't think it calls attention to the right area of the body.
When you said that, you were looking at me and you said, I don't think big. And then you looked away, looked right back. When you looked away, you thought of someone. Who was it that you're thinking of?
We have a big crew. So it could be, it's not Nye or Alex, but we have a big crew.
It's definitely neither one of them.
I'm
just saying, I don't
Griffin,
know.
Griffin, you want to fill in the blanks? I mean, you're quite the keen observer of the show. I'll say this. If you've got moobs, I don't think loud T-shirts are a good thing. We've got a lot of pouty moobs on the show.
Oh, I don't agree. I feel like we could go even crazier with the loud shirts. Expression from these people they come into the studio to do the show. Come on, man. Rock those loud shirts.
What a stupid day. National Loud Shirt
National
Day.
Number three.
Ozzy Osbourne had on a loud shirt this weekend.
Did he?
Yeah, but they're allowed to. Rockers, especially old rockers. Okay. I don't know if you have any interest with what went down yesterday. Because you asked me, check that, Saturday. You asked me if I had watched the WNBA title game, And I said, no, I didn't even know it was on. I have a nice little three TV setup, so right? And it was sports and replay of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony. And I got to tell you, I enjoyed it. I actually texted you last night. I'm like, we are going to talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because some of these people going in are our people. Not our age, but like 20 years in front of us, 25 years in front of us. And you fired right back. You're like, well, Uncle Paul's not in. Let's talk about that.
It's very alarming to me because I went there in 2014. When I went to Cleveland, I'd never been to anywhere in Ohio. And I decided, when I was a little boy, I went to Columbus. But I went there because I wanted to go to the NFL Hall of Fame. And on the day I was leaving town, I had a whole morning to kill. So I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I breezed through it. I didn't give it its just due. I'm not a big rock and roll guy, whatever. I mean, but then I was fascinated by seeing that they actually have a hip-hop division. And they run DMC.
I mean, it's becoming the Music Hall of Fame. And rock and roll is an amalgamation of so many different styles of music.
Right, right. But when I'm looking at some of the people that were in there from, and I can't remember the names off the top of my head, but from the 50s and 60s, and I think to myself, like the old Dick Clark Caravan of Stars, right? We saw that in the movie La Bamba. And we saw that was during when the plane went down, the plane crash, that was during that tour, the Big Bopper, Richie Valens, right? When I see some of the names that are in there and I think to myself, well, my uncle was in there, and you think of all the hits. When we had him on last year and you were like, I didn't realize some of the discography, those songs that he wrote for Buddy Holly.
He wrote so many songs.
He still got writing credits on Drake and Michael Jackson after he died when they found Michael Jackson's old stuff, and he's like, I own the rights of this, and he's giving it to different people here. Put this on your album, put this on yours. There are people that are getting in that Hall of Fame. They deserve to get in. I get it. But if they're getting in, my uncle should be in.
Class last night, and I don't have everyone's name because there were a lot of contributors, but Ozzy, Tribe Called Quest, and I keep saying last night, this weekend, Mary J. Blige, Foreigner, Peter Frampton, Big Mama Thornton, Cher, Kool & the Gang, Dave Matthews, and Dionne Warwick. Between the first and the last name I mentioned, Ozzy and Dionne Warwick, who's a bigger badass? I'll add, in real life. Because we've heard about Ozzy licking up urine and snorting ants, and we know he's crazy biting the heads off of doves and
bats.
And bats.
Yeah.
But there was a bar here in town at one point where
Dionne Warwick, she took on Gianni Russo.
They were dating at the time?
Yeah.
So she was living in Vegas.
Yeah, State Street.
Yep.
Which is over there behind what's now the Westgate.
Yep.
So near Joe W. Center. Brown. Yeah. Yeah. On the outside, but it was State Street because the main entrance was on State Street. So on the outside of Commercial Center.
There's some stories.
Oh,
she can stand
I've
up for
got
herself.
Stories. Forget she about them.
She can
I got
stand
stories.
Up for herself.
I turned 18 and got a valet job there, and it was the first time I went into a DJ booth and started spinning music. And boy, did we see some things. But yeah, Dionne Warwick, she made her mark in that place with Gianni Russo. But I think Ozzy Osbourne takes he gets the
he's,
badass.
One of the stars to modern metal.
By the way, I saw Peter Frampton here.
Is that right?
Right up the street on Harmon when the Aladdin had the Performing Arts Theater. It was the Frampton Comes Alive album, and it was that 77, 78-ish?
76.
So right up there on Harmon.
Yeah.
That's where we all went to. I graduated from there, by the way. But that's where all the concerts were being held, there. And then eventually in the 80s, the Rotunda hosted them at the convention center.
Dude, the fascinating thing when you watch it, because there was a lot of these artists in their 70s and 80s, is the aging process. And it's, I mean, I think you can do a certain amount of stuff to kind of control how you age. But a lot of these people live the hardest life ever, and some of them came out of it. They're like, it's crazy.
Well,
Lou Gramm tried to get up there and sing, and he was, you know, he's pretty solid. From Foreigner, he had Kelly Clarkson with him, but he couldn't belt it out. And then Hagar's up there. He's trying to do Ozzy, and he was pretty good. And Sammy Hagar, 77 years old.
Well, it was like
Dionne Warwick's 83. She was up there doing it. Like, Ozzy 74. Ozzy was kind of to be expected. Ozzy was in a chair and like kind of didn't look the most alert. Like he was not going to get up and start running around doing, you know, crazy train.
It's like the memes that we were seeing during 2020 for the people that were anti-vax, and they were saying, if you lived through the 70s and some of the stuff that was ingested, or some of the stuff we did off the back of toilet tanks, you can see where I'm going with this. But if you lived through there and we did all that and survived, we'll be fine without the vax.
COVID ain't going to beat me. Number two.
Number two.
You know, the other side of the Chiefs story yesterday, aside from what I was mentioning about 20 minutes ago, which is Patrick Mahomes brilliantly taking advantage of the softening of the sidelines where you don't dare hit a quarterback. So he popped off a 33-yard run. Has the league figured out Brock Purdy? Or is this just a shortage of weapons, Willie? Because he did not look good yesterday. Bad overthrows. Was not sharp. Or do you look up and you're like, he doesn't have his weapons? Good enough excuse?
Well, you just got done saying it. I mean, Chiefs defense is pretty dang good. So, I mean.
No Debo. He went out. Ayuk goes out with an injury. You're already missing one of the best offensive players in the league, McCaffrey.
Yeah.
There's come a point where a quarterback just he doesn't have the guys he needs to excel.
Is it? I don't necessarily know if it's fair to say, well, he's being exposed because now he can't, you know. But when you think right now, Steve, and someone just says it right off the top of your head. Now, I have my two answers, but when you say, who's the best quarterback in the league? First person everyone's going to say is who? Mahomes, right? What did we talk about before? The offense isn't the same, but they're finding ways to win. You can have a great defense, but you got to have a fantastic game manager. And over the years, the offense has sort of regressed, but he's continued to do what he does when he has the ball. So now Brock Purdy's going to have to test that, because the 49ers had built the defense, but without its offensive weapons, can Purdy do what Mahomes has done with the Chiefs?
I also forgot to mention that arguably Trent Williams may be the most important player on the Niners, and he got ejected.
Yeah.
He got punched. He got an uppercut. Both players were kind of low. The Chiefs player gave him an uppercut, and then he came over the top with an overhand right. Everyone saw it.
Yeah.
They're like, Trent, you're out of the game. Top story.
Number one.
You were saying earlier, Yankees-Dodgers World Series, you're a Dodgers fan. Should kids bring their parents to sporting events as a little payback? You were saying your son might take you to a World Series game if you can get in for, what, less than $5,000 for two tickets?
Less than $2,500.
I thought it was $2,500
apiece. No. Less than $2,500 total.
That's $5,000's outrageous.
Yeah.
$2,500. No, that's good.
Yeah. I don't know if you're obligated to. If you have the means to and you want to do that, I mean, you know the relationship I have with my son. Right? I was a single father from the week of his first birthday till this day, in a sense. So, I mean, and we did a lot of things together. I took him to a lot of games. Took him when there was nothing in Las Vegas. Took him to, you know, San Diego and Denver to see. He was a Buccaneer fan as a kid growing up. Took him to the NBA Finals. Took him to Dodger Stadium. So, I mean.
So, he owes you a little bit. He's doing okay.
Nothing.
Hey, he does.
No, he does.
My father took me to sporting events all the time. He was not a sports fan. The more I find out about him over the years, he's not a sports fan. Can I tell you what made him the happiest? We were all in New Orleans together for a few days last week. We took him to a place to get turtle soup. That's all he wanted. Like, very simple. Just want some turtle soup. Okay, we'll take you to a place, you get turtle soup. Simple pleasures.
I'm not even going to go there.
Well, you can start. You can start it.
I'm not going to go there. I'll tease you, but I no, because it's too, no.
Let's get into the Chiefs, the Rams, some other teams around the National Football League. We're going to hook up with Eddie Kennison, former wide receiver in the NFL and at LSU.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN, Las Vegas, and ESPN, Reno.
We're in the front yard. Two games on the way. Ellis Island. Great beer garden. Menu here is tremendous. $7 bites right now. $7 drinks. Also, Mega Monday, so you buy one of those 50-ounce drinks, the Mega Mary, the Mega Mosa. There's more than that. You buy one, you get one. How cool is that? Should mention some breaking Raider news, or do I just tease it and save it for like 20 minutes? Nah. They've added a quarterback to the roster. Aiden O'Connell's down for 4 to 6 weeks, broken thumb. They have added Jameis Winston. Although we'll get to that. That's who I'd like to be on the Raiders. You know I love Jameis Winston. They've added a former second-round pick, Desmond Ridder.
I just got a text from the Raiders.
There you go.
Said, I don't have anything in the way of a confirmation of the Desmond Ridder reports.
Okay, well,
that means that it's confirmed.
Yes. Other folks are reporting Desmond Ridder signed off the Cards practice squad. Let's get into the NFL. Let's talk quarterbacks. Let's talk receivers. Let's talk the right now the kings of the NFL, the Chiefs. We'll get into the Rams a little bit, who beat the Raiders yesterday. Eddie Kennison, former NFL receiver, former LSU receiver, is up with Steve and Willie. How are you, sir?
Hey, good afternoon. Oh, good evening, guys. How are y'all?
We are good. We are good. When, you know, we have Mark McMillan on the show all the time, and I think Mark, first and foremost, considers himself an Eagle, a Philly Eagle, even though he played for the Chiefs and other teams. Who is your team when you tell people, hey, that's my team, that's the team I played for in the NFL?
Oh, it's the exact team that you just call Kings, the Chiefs. And that's the team I call. That's the team I played with the longest. I stayed in Kansas City for almost 20-plus years. And my two older boys were raised there. I retired as a Chief, so the Chiefs are definitely my team.
Well, then let's keep it right there, Eddie. And thanks again, by the way, for getting right back to me this morning. We met at the Vegas Kickoff Classic with our guy, Grillin' McMillan. And I told you I'd be hitting you up the week of the Chiefs. So Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, they stay undefeated. They beat the 49ers in the Super Bowl rematch. But I'm wondering, you know, they've come out and said it, that this is not the same Chiefs team. And they've had to learn how to win in different ways, grind it out. Mahomes being a manager, the defense strengthening, it's not the same offense. What is your take on the makeup of the Chiefs right now?
Well, it's exactly that. You know, we've had a few receivers go down, you know, like a couple of our top guys go down in the last few weeks. But that's what championship teams, that's what they do. You know, they not only build the starting guys or the top guys, you know, it's a complete organization through and through. So when you have a roster and you train the guys who aren't starting for the opportunity for when they do go in and play, they know what's happening. They know what's going on. They know what's expected of them to play at a level just like if they were a starter. And that's just what Andy Reid and the rest of the Chiefs organization have done, is that they groom those younger guys who aren't starting to step in and not lack anything, offense, defense, or special teams, and they can go and continue winning football games.
We saw with New England that dynasty built, right, around Belichick and Brady, but we saw what happened when Brady goes to Tampa Bay. They win a Super Bowl, and the Patriots decline. How much of the Chiefs right now is Andy Reid, is Patrick Mahomes, a combination of both? If Mahomes one day were to say, I'm out of here, what happens to the Chiefs, depending on, obviously, the quarterback that comes in? But is it a similar situation? Is it one? Is it the other? Is it a little bit of both from what you know, what you see?
Yep, it's a little bit of both because Andy, it'll be tough for him to do it without Patrick. And I think, and vice versa, it would be, you know, if Pat was to go somewhere else, he would elevate that team. But I think it's both. And I don't know what other quarterback, you know, in the Chiefs organization would play at the level and to the talent level that Pat has been playing, you know, for the last 4 years, 5 years. I just don't know a guy that will be there and do exactly what he does. I mean, you can coach a guy up at the quarterback position, but they can't do what Patrick Mahomes is doing. So I think it'll be a little bit more difficult for Andy because Pat can go anywhere and play and be Patrick Mahomes, and he would elevate a team.
We are paid by the hot take in sports radio. I'll give you one. Based on what I've seen now, these last couple of years with Andy Reid and the team changing up with philosophy, I think Andy Reid's actually a better all-time coach than Belichick.
You know what? I may have to agree with that. But it's not far off now. We're not diminishing Bill at all. But I agree with that. But it's like a quick one and 1A. It's not a 1-2. It's a 1-1A.
Eddie Kennison, former NFL wide receiver, is with us. You keeping an eye on what the Raiders are doing? Because it's not going well right now, and they have issues at quarterback with injuries. And, they, you know, both of these guys just are not elite quarterbacks. And, you know, they had the issue with Devontae Adams. They're trying to give a guy probably a head start on his head coaching career in Antonio Pierce. What do you think of the Raiders?
Yeah, so I haven't paid a whole lot of attention just because, you know, I've had no reason to really pay attention to the Raiders. I know over the last few years, you know, I would probably say the last decade, you know, the Raiders hadn't been a football team that looks like they're going to contend for anything. And you know, I could say the same for a few other teams in the National Football League. But we're playing the Raiders this week. And, you know, I think it comes down to, you know, scouting. It comes down to ownership. It comes down to head coach. It comes down to everybody in the organization to go out and find guys that can be put into an organization on the field and help you win. And it's just unfortunate the Raiders hadn't done that to the level like a Kansas City has done. And, you know, when Bill Belichick was coaching the Patriots in the manner in which he did it, the Raiders just hadn't found that rhythm yet. And everyone has their turn. You know, there was some years long ago where the Raiders were a great football team and they were winning, you know, a Super Bowl here and there. But just lately, they just hadn't been able to find that rhythm.
Eddie, you're a receiver in the NFL. You understand the chemistry that you build with your quarterbacks. I'd like to get your take on Devontae Adams now that he's gone, obviously, to New York. But both times, he left Green Bay to play with a quarterback who he called his best friend and, you know, he played with in college. Now he's with the guy who he obviously built chemistry with, Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers. Do you empathize with his situation? Do you understand sort of from a receiving standpoint? Should he have stuck it out in Vegas? What's your take on that situation?
Well, I have two different opinions about it. One, chemistry is everything, whether it's quarterback, receiver, but you mentioned Devontae in particular. And yes, you have to have chemistry. You have to understand everything that works, but it's not just the chemistry. It's not just the quarterback and the receiver on the field. It's the offensive lineman. Are they blocking? Is the running back, is he pass blocking? You know, everything has to fall in line. It's just not the quarterback-receiver tandem. Yes, it has to be chemistry, but there's so many more variables that go into it. Now, on the other hand, for him, you know, wanting to leave, I can understand frustration, and I can understand needing or wanting a change, you know, to better your career or give yourself an opportunity to win the Super Bowl. And for him to be able, you know, and Devontae's not getting any younger, you know, he wants to give himself an opportunity to win a Super Bowl, and in particular with his best friend and Aaron Rodgers and linking back over him, and hopefully they can make a run for it.
Eddie Kennison with us. When's the last time you got down to Baton Rouge to see an LSU game?
Brother, I work in LSU athletics, so I've been here for the last four years at every single home game for LSU.
There you go. My bad. I should have done my research. You know, I don't know how objectively you can speak to the head coach there. I guess there's always an outsider thing when a guy like Brian Kelly comes in, but I think he's done a hell of a job. I don't know why people are out to get him all the time. 27-7. This season looks like it's turning into a really cool one. And now with the playoff, you know, you can have a bad game here or there. As long as you're peaking at the end of the season, then you're golden.
Hey, and that's right, brother. And, you know, when Brian came in, you know, a couple years ago, yes, he didn't fully understand the culture of Louisiana because he had never, you know, stayed here, been here, coached here, any of that. But he came in, you know, he had a winning season his first year, but then he really got, he immersed himself in the culture of the South in Louisiana. And every year, even before he got to LSU, Brian Kelly is a proven winner. The only thing that he hasn't won is a national championship, and I believe that's why he came to Baton Rouge, to give himself an opportunity to win a championship, the national championship. And every game from the start of this season, from our first game in Vegas against USC, our offense, our defense, and our special teams have gotten better each week, and we continue to win because Brian Kelly, he goes in, he puts his head down, and he understands the game of football, and he understands winning, and he's getting our football team to that point where we can get into the playoffs and then compete for the national championship.
I got like 30 seconds left. Working for LSU Sports Property, What's the pressure like to win there? And then on your front, where you're trying to sell the product, get sponsorship, all that type of stuff. Expectations. expectations are different than, say, a place we're doing well here at UNLV, but at LSU, man, the sky's the limit with the expectations.
Hey, brother, when you're hired here as a coach at any sport, we're expecting national championships, and we're expecting it the first year. Yes, we have a little grace, but that's the expectation. It's national championships, brother. That's why you play sports. It's to win. It's to win national championships at this level, and that's the expectation that we have here at LSU, and there won't be anything less moving forward for any coach that ever graces any sport here at LSU. It's national championships.
Eddie, we appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me on, brother. Appreciate it.
There he is, Eddie Kennison. I love the brother stuff. And keep in mind, you're not guaranteed to win at all these spots. He played for a guy, Curly Holman, who in 2 years was like 9-16. So you're not guaranteed. Brian Kelly's doing a good job.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN, Las Vegas, and ESPN, Reno.
Halfway point of the show, we're getting ready for Double Dip on Monday Night Football. Wheeler Ramirez hosting the party tonight. We give away two VIP packages for Sunday football viewing. What are the packages? VIP means all you can drink beer, all you can eat off this menu, and the all you can eat is 27 items deep, including dessert. All their stuff is good. Earlier, we had this kind of charred smell wafting through the air, maybe some pork belly bites.
Something smoky.
Maybe some briskets.
A smoky something or another.
And then if you want, you can get Tony's Rigatoni. You can get you and Mateo have, and I know this is Chris running the show. I looked over at him like it was Mateo. You guys have crushed a couple of salmon.
Oh, the salmon last week was incredible.
It's good stuff here. It's good stuff here.
I've yet to have one thing bad. I'm trying to figure out. I'm looking at it right now. I'm trying to figure out if there's something I can get that I haven't had yet.
Are you a variety guy when you go to restaurants on a regular basis, or you just kind of, you know what, I'm not going to stray from my norm?
It depends on the place, and it depends on the menu. Like this is I like this menu because it's simple. It's not got 17 pages to it, different options, and the lunch and the dessert and the this and that. It's straightforward. It's what it is.
I'm a man of structure. I can eat the same thing all the time at the same place. Yeah. And oftentimes, like I was saying earlier, making a trip to New Orleans, I was lucky enough to be there on Saturday when Ole Miss and LSU were playing, which is a back-and-forth game that went to overtime, and LSU wound up winning. That place goes crazy for LSU football. Mm. But when I'm in New Orleans, I could eat gumbo every day. Because every type is different, too.
Makes sense.
Every day. I'm a very easy person to deal with,
the
Willie.
Place
very that, easy.
Yeah, well.
Contrary to rumors that are spread by, you know, people like you.
Whoa.
Now
you're a little cantankerous today.
I'm cantankerous every Monday, but it's like a good cantankerous. I'm fired up. Fired up for the World Series. We still haven't gotten to Rodgers and the Jets. So we'll get to that.
Well,
we haven't really deep-dived on the Raiders or deep-dove, whatever. RJ Clifford's coming up, so he usually pours gasoline on the fire.
You get a little irritated when people are doing other things. If they're not looking at you, you think they're not. But see, I'm a multitasker. I can listen to you and do a couple things at the same time. But you get fired up, you get a little ornery if you're not. It's like, you know.
Well,
it's
I'm
like,
talking it's to like, you, and you're like, you're doing like hand signals to the server.
Relax. It wasn't like, the server, it was the manager.
11 seconds until the break. It can wait.
It was the manager.
Okay, my bad.
And. Relax.
I
feel like you're an SO, and I got to pay attention to you.
We kind of are. We're more than brothers. We kind of are significant others for a few days a week. That is the way radio shows work. You never know what you're walking into.
Not with you.
You never know.
Jeez Louise.
It really is like coming home. Because I've been in some relationships. I was like tiptoeing in the door like, what is going to happen? Okay.
That's how it is with you. For every co-host, which Steve are we getting?
I am the SO, yeah. I'm the
and brother. And I feel like I catch the brunt because it's coming off the weekend.
No.
You're coming in from Corvallis. You're tired. Plus, I got to worry. Thank God the Chargers are playing tonight, because if they played yesterday and they lost, then you dealt with the SO, which means I'm also dealing with the SO. Two SOs.
Can I tell you what you're walking into today? I want to do a lot of social media. Sometimes things just don't cooperate.
Oh, yeah, the camera.
I'm like an hour and a half. I'm watching a Kevin Kruger video. Not loading. And finally, I'm like, all right, I'll do it after the show.
I'm about to.
I had a conversation. Well, lots of people had good conversations today. There was a media throng out there with Kevin Kruger. The Runner Rebels basketball season is something to look forward to. I love talking food and weight. It's a weird thing. I love big people. So I got to talk to a guy named Bear.
Okay.
Bear Cherry. And Bear's going to be one of the starting big men, I think. And he came here, Willie. He was 6'11", 302. I like that. So briefly we chatted with other media people around, like, hey, what'd you do? So I'm sure he's a guy you're going to want to talk to about fitness and how he dropped the weight. He's now 273.
Nice.
That's a good weight loss. And then I also pointed out to other guys, you know what? When you're 6'11", being Bear is pretty good. When you're 5'9", like me, Bear can be not, you know, I mean, I guess it could be a good thing.
Cuddly, cuddly teddy bear.
It's Cofield and Company's Eye on Sports Gambling, presented by Oasis Bar and Grill, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
You know, if you told me the Raiders quarterbacks would underachieve and one would get hurt, Aiden O'Connell. By the way, they signed Desmond Ridder today as another option with Akon down. If you told me that Brock Bowers would have 47 catches through seven games, I'd be impressed. I'd also think they wouldn't be 2-5. But they are. And a lot of it comes down to that quarterback play. They're getting the ball to Bowers, but they're also throwing it to the other team. Minshew had a couple yesterday that were just ill-advised.
Horrible.
And not good. He has extreme highs and lows. But for now, he's going to be the guy, Willie. I find a couple of situations very fascinating in the NFL.
Okay.
The Raiders.
In general.
And the Browns. Because when things are down in the dumps, what do you do? What do you do? We hear so much about tanking, but you got active NFL players who want to go out, many of them, and play hard. Fulfill their contract, make sure they have a deal next year. So what are the Browns going to do? Are they going to play their best guy at quarterback? Or not?
Well,
I mean, there's no argument here, right?
Let me ask
that
you.
That the best quarterback on the team is?
Right now?
Yeah. I don't know why there's a hopping and popping.
I think that.
This is outrageous. I know you like him. I know you like the family, but come on.
Here's the thing. I think it's a win-win situation no matter who you go with. If you go with Jameis Winston, then you still have hope on the season. If you go with DTR, then you are putting yourself in a position to get a high draft pick. Let's put it that way. And I don't think DTR is a bad quarterback. I just think that he's not
where Jameis Winston is right now.
And Jameis
Winston
can't
has
handle
been
you know where he's at?
Underused around the NFL since he's left Tampa.
Listen.
He's better.
Listen. Yes.
But what's the goal for the team?
I'm going to give you the perfect analogy. DTR with the Browns right now is DTR his freshman year with UCLA. He had a crap offensive line. He had a crap team that was trying to figure out Chip Kelly. He was under pressure too much. He was getting sacked. And he wasn't, but by his fourth season, he was breaking UCLA records. He had been with them long enough. He had learned. I don't think he's in the position to control to manage this franchise. He's not in a winnable situation. So you have to give it to somebody who's a little more seasoned like Jameis Winston. By going with DTR, I think you're getting the answer in terms of it's a win-win. If you go with Winston, you're putting yourself in a better position to win now. If you put it in DTR, you're setting yourself up for a high draft pick.
If I'm the Browns, I'm trading Jameis. Now you're not going to get a lot back, but you don't even have the situation where people could say, hey, instead of DTR, put in the veteran. So just move him, right? Eliminate that issue. And if you give Dorian Thompson-Robinson, Las Vegas, the rest of the season, and he actually turns out to be a viable option, awesome. If he doesn't, awesome. I will say this, though.
So you think Cleveland should trade Jameis to Vegas?
Well, that's why the situations kind of mirror each other. I don't know that the Raiders should be trading for more quarterback talent and winning a bunch of games. And I don't like saying that. Now, also keep in mind, there are some people, I think a lot of people on the collegiate level, who don't know how NFL organizations scout quarterbacks, and especially the deep divey stuff. There are people around the NFL who think this quarterback draft stinks. So what are you tanking for? Right? Because it ain't a franchise quarterback, potentially. Is Shador a franchise quarterback? Is he not? Is Quinn Ewers? Hell, there are rumors today that Quinn Ewers is going to bail on Texas. Is Cam Ward?
Well, the problem with Shador Sanders, and we talked about this, is you're not just drafting Shador Sanders. You're bringing in a Ball family, the Lonzo Ball situation, right? So, I mean, do you want that with it? Do you want the baggage that comes with it? I think that's an issue that has to be addressed. Can he? We don't know if he. I mean, it's kind of rare these days where you can actually pinpoint and say, this guy is it. He's the franchise. He's a franchise quarterback. He's coming in. I mean, did we really see Jaden Daniels lifting the Commanders to where they are right now?
There were some people on ESPN early on in the draft process, and that's really when this whole thing begins.
Okay, so there are people that see that.
But like Orlovsky said, and I'm trying to think who else, there was another pretty highly touted NFL mind voice who said, I think Jaden Daniels is quarterback one. He's the best guy in the draft.
Okay, so people are saying that about Shador. So wait a minute. You have a couple of people.
I think people are saying Shador is the guy on the collegiate level. I think former NFL players are saying Shador, but I also don't think they're judging the way that NFL personnel people do. I don't think Shador Sanders, when he gets into the NFL draft process, is going to grade out that well.
Okay, but you just said with Jaden Daniels, Dan Orlovsky, he's not in NFL upper brass. He's a former player. So in the same respect, if former players are saying that Shador Sanders is the guy, then with your argument,
I meant former players who were just getting into the media, who I think are also emotionally tied to Deion.
Okay, well then, I'm just
hell, you know what? I forget his first name. ESPN's employing a new mock draft guy. I guess McShay's out of the mix, and Shador. This guy had Shador going top five, and had Cam Ward going top five.
I personally think that he's got too much going against him. I don't think that I'm not saying that he's not capable, but I think Shador Sanders, the braggadocio, the sort of the way that they've come across, the brashness, what we saw at Big 12 Media Days, Deion, with what comes with it, I think he's got things stacked against him, and I think people are going to come after him.
That all said, Deion is doing a nice job.
There's no
qualifier. I'm not going to be a freaking pansy like Paul Feinbaum, who's got qualifiers for every time now. He's like, well, I guess, you know, Deion is a good coach. He is doing a good job with his team, and the personnel looks to be improved, especially at the power positions, most importantly on defense. And if Warren Sapp is the guy, I give kudos to Warren Sapp because they look better on defense. They're stopping the run. They're doing a nice job. And they're 5-2, and they are on the mix. In the Big 12, which in the Big 12 and the ACC, the mix is real deep. And that means playoff spots could be available. And we'll see if they can keep it going. And Shador on the collegiate level is a really, really good player. UNLV is in the mix. And they've got control of their own destiny. They've got Boise coming to town on the home field. Certainly got motivation. They want to win the conference. They want to get the conference championship game again. They want to avenge what happened last year where they got kind of punked in the first half in the pass game and then Genty grinded them down in the second. But, you know, there are little moments throughout the season, and this is something I talked about in the offseason. I was a little hesitant to say with UNLV, Willie, that they were going to go 10-2 or 9-3 because there were a lot of cases last year where they played in close games or where they fell behind and they came up big. And they got stops, and they got great special teams. It happened over and over and over again last year. Now, it didn't work out in the Syracuse game, but this Oregon State game was another one of those challenges. They're down 17-6. There's 4 minutes left in the half, and you're like, what the hell's going on here? They can't get the ball back. They can't get third down stops. They're in trouble.
Well, how many deficits have they turned back this year?
Well, last year was the year they were behind a bunch.
Right, but
in games.
But again, they're showing what right. we're seeing they, the last 2 years.
They don't lose it when they're down. They don't lose confidence.
Which has been the mantra with this team.
And then at the end of the game, when all hell is breaking loose, did you watch the end of the game? It was crazy with the officiating. Oregon State goes down the field.
I'm trying to remember.
They get to the three. Check that. They're inside the 10. There's 3 seconds left on the clock because they threw a pass over the middle to the tight end. He goes down. There's 3 seconds. The official sets the ball, runs out, and they're not set. Listen to Tom Brenneman try to describe what the hell was going on here on the final play.
It's 3 seconds. They've got a set. They're going to put it in play. And this is a live play. Or is it? There's a flag on the far side. Might have been a false start. If it's a false start, this game's over. Because they would have a runoff.
And I think Javonte McCoy might have thought in the back of his mind he might not have enough time to spike this football. The coaching point was 3 seconds was the cutoff. Anything below that, you cannot spike the football or it's risky.
Well, again, if this is a penalty against the offense, this game's over.
The ball was snapped prior to the ready for play. There was no foul and no play. It is first down, Oregon State.
Wow.
Yeah, with 3 seconds left.
Right, this is a live play here now. Here we go. And the carry fell down. No flag in the secondary. And UNLV comes out of here with a win.
That's a game that could easily go the other way, and it's a season buster for their hopes. Down the stretch, I was standing right down there. The referees completely botched that. The ball's in the middle of the field. It is set. There's 3 seconds left. Oregon State isn't on the same page. They don't know what the hell's going on. The quarterback wants to set everyone. He snaps it. The two receivers on the far side of the field are moving. They're running. The other one's not set. The official right in front of them throws the procedure flag. Then you see everyone come together with the head official, and the guy who set the ball doesn't say a word for like 18 seconds. And everyone just nods, and he just makes the call. And he's like, nope, another play. Like, there's no more plays. The game's over. And you can see the coaching staff is like, no, that's it. 10-second runoff. Brenneman got it right. And then they run this play, and like, again, no one was set. And Jalen Catalon happened to cross legs with the tight end for Oregon State. He falls down, and then I swear, Willie, you should have heard the sound. This kid McCoy is not a great throwing quarterback, but he's got a friggin' cannon. Actually, I almost found out how hard he throws because he threw a ball earlier in the fourth quarter. I'm standing on the sidelines. The receiver misses it. It skips off the ground, and I do one of these like, ah, it's going to catch it. And it screamed by my pinky. I'm like, my Lord, if I had tried to actually move my hand over a little bit, I would have a broken pinky today. But he threw the ball 1,000 miles an hour into the chest of Grimes. It was like a gunshot. It hit him just right in the chest. That hurt. And dropped down to the ground. Game over. But the officiating was so disorganized in the final seconds. Those can kill seasons.
So, well, they can kill championship dreams. So, yeah. Basically what you're saying is that officiating crew left Corvallis, jumped on a plane, went to Brooklyn, and called last night's WNBA game.
Yeah, there were some problems there. It was, listen, Adam Hill says it all the time, you know, regular member of the show, that officials do decide a lot of games with calls during and especially at the end of the game.
Yep.
And sometimes they're just completely disorganized.
People always say, well, if you didn't put yourself in that position, you wouldn't let them. But nevertheless, like, for instance, last night with the Lynx, there were things in the third quarter they could have done better to not put themselves in a position where it came down to the last play. But at the same token, when it does get to that point, Adam's 100% right. Yeah. Officials control the game. Well, I can go on and on about last night, but I don't want to take away from your UNL.
There was also weird stuff with the facilities there because they do a good job at that stadium. Really cool stadium for that school. It's about 35,000, but the lights are on and off all the time during the breaks. And UNLV came to the line one time. The lights weren't really on and ran a play, and the refs just said, well, we'll just let it go. And then, like, three-quarter lighting. Weird game. And they did a lot of good things in the game, but with some bizarre circumstances, they were fortunate to get out of there and, you know, keep their highest aspirations alive.